We're going to talk about precursor aliens today, kind of.
Oh my God, I'm ready. Okay.
Yeah.
I love this is a good segue aliens.
That we just did. This is maybe this will be, is this our first? No, we did Anthem.
We did Anthem. Anthem
had precursor stuff in it, didn't it?
A little bit. We barely touched on precursors when we talked about the Animus.
Oh, that's right.
There was some talk in there, but it wasn't the main focus.
Well, this will be the next entry in the progenitor race cycle here.
Amazing. Okay.
But not in the way you expect. Okay. We are going to start with your bright spot. Ah, I remember two things this time.
Nice. Yes, my bright spot. Oh, easy. We went to the beach today. You can reuse bright spots, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, perfect.
Look, I don't know if you've looked around lately, but I think we're going to need to reuse bright spots at some point.
Yeah. So we drove out to a really nice beach about an hour away from us and had a nice, I guess, morning to early afternoon, just hanging out, building sandcastles and doing all that good stuff. We left the PB&Js at home, unfortunately, which was
a bit
of a problem. But we brought enough snacks, so everyone was still happy. And it was beautiful. It was like a 75-degree day, mostly sunny, a little windy. So it was never like hot and sweaty and gross, which is my least favorite beach time. It was perfect.
Well, that is delightful. Was it heavily trafficked? I feel like today could have been quite busy.
It was getting there by the time we left, but it wasn't too bad. It was, yeah, I guess it's Labor Day, so folks had the day off, I guess. So
yeah,
it was kind of busy, but not like it's not like a party beach, so there wasn't like an unruly amount of music and just like baseballs flying everywhere. I feel like that's something that happens all the time at beaches, is that people are playing catch and everyone is getting prepared to be domed.
Yeah, that's gotta be. The beach seems significantly more stressful when you have a small human to keep track of also.
Yeah.
The chaos of a beach.
Yeah, a little bit. There was also the thing we like about this beach is that it's like a pretty low key, like not like huge ocean beach. It's just kind of like a relatively small, like mostly a locals only beach of a seaside town that we really like going to. But there is very large rock formations that everyone is climbing around there. So, and that was the, you know, that feeling you get when you're like at like a height, or you feel like you get that feeling in your bones that at any point I could fall over and this is going to hurt really bad. I just had that the entire time. I just like hovering over my 2-year-old child, making sure that she doesn't stumble anywhere. Yeah. And he was fine, but like,
yeah,
everything was covered in powdery sand, and like he was carrying a bucket full of water and sand in it, and it was stressful for me, but he was having a blast, so it doesn't really matter. And then we got down by the water and it was fine.
A physics problem in the making.
It really was.
The friction coefficient is not great.
Yeah,
that extra weight swinging off axis.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. And then he's like 2, so he's like walking around and he's looking at everything, but not noticing all of the cracks in the rocks around him.
Oh yeah,
just like oh no, he's gonna 127 hours himself here. And we're going to be at the beach, and I don't know what to do about it.
You're going to have to chew his arm off. Yeah.
Yeah. Luckily, everyone came home, all limbs attached, and everyone was happy. But
came home to sandwiches, even.
We came home to sandwiches, correct. We came home and had our PB&Js. Slightly soggy, but they worked out.
I'm going to steal what maybe would be a future bright spot of yours, but I'm going to steal it today.
Okay.
Because I hit shuffle on the full like playlist on my phone the other day because I could not choose a thing.
That's a real roll the dice maneuver.
Just yeah, because I have like equally wide and narrow interests.
And like 15 years of it.
Yeah, narrow but very disparate interests, I guess. How about that? So my bright spot is going to be Frank Wildhorn's Jekyll and Hyde the musical.
Ooh.
Because that soundtrack is still real good.
It's been real good.
It's been good since I did that show in like third grade. So.
Oh, I forgot you did that show in third grade. What a weird show to do for a third grader.
Yeah, man. Starts to put some of the pieces together, doesn't it?
Yeah,
you're like, yeah, this is the 9-year old who was doing that. That checks out.
Woof.
Yeah.
Brothels. Learned drug brothels. Use.
Yep.
It's good. Good third grade fodder.
Yeah, I remember
the duality of man.
We were doing calligraphy in art class. So I did the lyrics to Facade as my calligraphy project. Which again, it was a lot for compared to what the other children were doing. It was noticeable.
Yeah, fanciful versions of your name versus an entire treatise on facades and how we all wear different faces.
Yeah, let's examine social dynamics here. Yeah.
Yeah, yikes.
Yep. Hmm.
I will put in links to the Jekyll and Hyde show because it is very good. Yeah. I will also put in links to the whatever the hard rock version of it is because that's also fun.
Jekyll and Hyde Resurrection,
I think that sounds right.
Was the subtitle?
There's some good
heavier
guitar solos in there that feel very odd in a Broadway show, but it's still good. Yeah.
They're like pretty butt rock from what I remember.
Yeah.
They're just like, yeah, we are doing guitar. We are doing like capital E, capital G electric guitar business here.
It's good stuff. They were having fun with it.
Couple extra tracks on that album too, relative to the original Broadway.
Yes. Yes. It's like a whole other additional character, I think. Like I feel like the brothel character gets a lot more in that one.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Hope I get to do that show again sometime.
I would just like to see it again.
Yeah. Same.
All right.
Okay.
We gotta
get off this before I start looking up tour dates.
Yeah. So the only thing I know about this episode is that you sent me one word, and it is pugmire, which I can only assume is a tabletop game.
It was a tabletop game.
Yeah, where you solve quagmires, but you're all dogs, and that's about as far as I've got.
I mean, you're not like wrong.
Okay. All right.
We'll say, here, I will drop you some cover art of this book. So, Pugmire, tabletop RPG based on the Open Gaming License. So it is very D&D like. It's a D20 system. There you go.
This is some Redwall ass looking thing. I love this.
Yeah.
Is that a St. Bernard strangling an ant?
Yes. Yes.
Sick.
Yeah.
A rogue corgi, short sword, and a dagger.
Reverse grip dagger. Yep.
Incredible.
Also ready to ruin an ant's day.
I love this.
Yeah, the art for this book is just, it's real good. It's real fun. It's got a vibe, and it sticks with it, and I am here for it.
Holy cow.
I found this in a vendor hall at a gaming convention. I had not heard of it. I had never seen it before. I knew nothing about it. And I was like, I am going to give them $40 and I'm going to take this home with me.
Yeah.
Probably
holy shit.
Never play it. I got it because I was like, well, if I ever need to run a game for my partner's family, this would probably be a good one.
I can see that. Like this, just based on this single cover image, I feel like the anthropomorphic animals just dealing with things that are not the end of the world by way of blood magic is a good starting point.
Yeah, I think they would absolutely like play Pathfinder too, but I think there's a chance that like something like this, you maybe get a little more role play buy-in than if yeah. someone's playing a different person. I could see it going either way, where this could be like a huge turnoff and it makes someone clamp down and withdraw even harder. But I can also imagine a little bit of distance from you as a human in your play acting can help.
Yeah. Also, I feel like for people who are not super into tabletop or even like fantasy kind of like stereotypes, dogs actually have a very good, they are very stereotypical in like our way that we address them. Like I already know how a golden retriever plays versus something like a Doberman.
Yeah. Yeah. We kind of have like a cultural understanding of generalized behavior.
Yeah.
Which does play into the system. This is actually like pretty fleshed out, I think. I've read through the book, I don't know, maybe twice now. I got this a long time ago, so I tried to brush back up on it for this episode. I don't know exactly how I want to present this yet, because it's a little haphazard, so I'm just going to kind of start, and we're going to see what you're curious about and okay. what I remember. So Pugmire is both the name of the property of like the game system itself. It is also the like primary city where the lore takes place. So that can get a little confusing. Yeah. So at this point, if I say Pugmire, I am probably referencing the city because everything we talk about is going to be, you know, within the system anyway.
Yeah.
And we're not going to talk too much about the mechanics today, believe it or not, even though that's usually kind of my thing.
Okay.
We're going to go through some of the world building. So this is both, it's not like an agnostic system like you would get with Savage Worlds or GURPS or something like that. It is, mm-hmm. it has its own lore and it's meant to be played within that lore. Okay. Obviously, it's tabletop RPG. Do whatever the hell you want. I'm not a
Yeah, guy. Sure.
But you get the idea. Like, D&D is pretty geared towards high fantasy, and this is a high fantasy of sorts. So, I promised you we would talk about progenitor races today.
I would like to hear about the progenitor races, please.
What if I tell you that we are the progenitor race?
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So, this is post-apocalyptic, probably not the right word.
Okay. Is it because post-human?
It is post-human.
Okay.
And like, the inciting incident of humans no longer being around is left very ambiguous.
Okay. But also, these dogs, they have biceps and thumbs, so like, you know, I would assume that there's probably something to do with, you know, something that would cause mutations of that scale, perhaps.
Yeah, let's start there. So yeah, physical form wise, we will refer to these as dogs because there are also canines, which are just what you currently think of as a dog. Anthropomorphized dogs.
Okay.
Exist at the same time as
just normal ass dogs.
Normal ass dogs. And they view them similarly to how we would view like a chimpanzee or an ape.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. At first I was, like, cuz sometimes they have like canines that hang out with them that do dog stuff.
Huh.
At first, my brain was like, that feels kind of gross.
That feels weird.
And then the next paragraph, it's like, yeah, you fucking put monkeys in zoos, so shut up. And I'm like, good good point, book. Can't argue with you there.
You got it. All
right. Yeah. There's lots of like little flavor text tidbits in here where I'm just like, ah, yeah, that's good. That's good. Like one of their timekeeping. I'm just, you know. The ADHD is going to flow through this episode.
Yeah, that's fine.
Dog timekeeping is not like super precise because they're dogs. So they like, they've got the day down as like a full day night cycle.
Uh-huh.
There's like morning, afternoon, evening, because you can kind of parse that out with sure. with the sun's movements.
But like an hour is like just a really squishy kind of nonsense quantity of time, because like fucking what's an hour to a dog? So an hour is like, it's an amount of time that you can perceive has passed, but not to like a noticeable degree to the sky. That's an hour.
Okay.
If the sky changes a bunch, yeah, then you've shifted from like morning to afternoon or afternoon to evening sort of thing.
Oh, I kind of wish that's how it works now.
Right? And below an hour is like if you needed like really short increments of time, it would be a wag. And dogs with longer tails typically have a slightly longer perception of a wag than dogs with shorter tails.
Yeah, okay. They're having fun with it. That's great.
They're having fun with it. They're having fun with it. So, physical form, as you saw, they're roughly the size of humans with a wider distribution.
Sure.
Into the, like, dog breeds. So, on average, you're looking like the 4 to 7 foot range.
Jeez. Okay.
The tech level that we'll get to in a little bit. Dog knowledge of, like, the before times is squishy, as you could imagine.
Sure.
So like the dog scholars are aware from artifacts that they've recovered and kind of what they've been able to piece together that humans were larger than dogs. So there's currently a bit of a debate on if dogs increased in size or if humans are just like 12 feet tall.
Interesting. Okay. That's some good precursor stuff. I like that.
Yeah, because there's just no way to know. They can tell, and tech level wise is like 14th, 15th century Europe.
I get that from this image at least.
Yeah, but humans also disappeared sometime in our future, because they have tech. Tech is listed assigned to humanity that we don't like quite have figured out, but are kind of on the way there. So there's like nanobot stuff and some genetic modification. Quantum computers exist.
Yeah.
So it's sometime in our future. And then another unknown length of time passes before we start to like build dog society. Could be a few hundred years, could be thousands of years. Unclear.
Wow, okay. That is much more robust of a world setting than I had expected for Saint Bernard in leather armor.
Oh, we're going to talk about political structures before we're done with this.
Okay.
This goes way deeper than it maybe necessarily needs to, given that I would probably have bought this just from the cover. And like, oh yeah, the dog breeds are kind of like classes. That's fun.
Yeah.
That was enough for me. But yeah, no, there's like some good lore in here. And the first half of the book is written from the perspective of a character in the world through journal entries. And then there's like fourth wall breaking stuff in the back half that explains it out of context as well.
Okay. That's a cool way of doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fun read. 4 to 7 feet tall. They do have fingers on their hands, as you noticed.
Mm-hmm.
They are bipedal, but they can still run on four legs. Full color vision, so they have a visual acuity similar to ours.
Oh, okay.
40 to 50 year lifespan, if nothing bad happens.
Okay.
To a dog, you're in the puppy range from like 0 to 10, young adult 10 to 15, full on adult 15 to 25. And then you're a real old dog after 35.
Okay.
Their like social structure is a little different. Trying to think if we have common properties that I can make analogies to yet or not. So the breeds roughly correlate to family. But family is far more encompassing. It's maybe closer to like daimyo samurai kind of vibe.
Okay. I was going to say like clans of some sort or something.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're playing all the societies that are described in the book. You can point to and be like, oh, I think this piece came from here, but it's all kind of jumbled together in unexpected ways, which is nice. So they're definitely playing off of some feudalism. Like, there's the political structure is definitely along that lines. But the family name is also, or sorry, the breed name is also their surname.
Okay.
Sometimes that isn't actually indicative of the breed of the dog due to like marriages or some other living arrangements that have changed.
But okay.
Typically kind of correlated.
Is there like a Ronin group that is just the Mutts?
There are the Mutts. Yeah. Okay. There is a Mutt town that was
Mutt town
established, and they live outside of Pugmire. But there are also Mutts within Pugmire. Mutt has become a surname, actually.
Gotcha. Okay.
So going from canines to dogs, this is where stuff gets a little weird. I mean, if it wasn't a little weird already. Mm-hmm. So this is referred to, as these animals being uplifted is the verb.
Oh yeah.
That
okay.
is used.
Yep.
Going from like what we conceive of that animal to this anthropomorphized version. And the indication from the source material is that this was something that humanity embarked on intentionally and coexisted with the uplifted dogs for some amount of time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so our current state of the world is like a combination of some of those original upliftings across various breeds and species, as well as evolution over time. And then like a lot of this tech is still laying around. So some of that stuff is still happening. There's like a rat cult that we'll talk about at some point, maybe okay. not today, that does some weird science. Yeah, so uplifting. So it was implied in the book that like this was a scientific process that humans at least started, and the first groups were dogs because dogs were already useful to human society. And they point out that like the first subjects were like police dogs, so they could give testimony in court.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, that's a bummer, but
I also see how you got
also
there.
Probably yep. yep. Also makes a lot of sense in ways that I don't like.
Woof.
Yeah. Woof indeed.
God damn it.
So we kind of start there with like working dogs, and then it spread to just kind of dogs in general, and then other races as well. So dogs are not the only anthropomorphized creatures running about in this land.
Okay. Oh, who gets uplifted next?
I don't have an order or like a discrete list, but there are dogs running around. You've got the cats over in the monarchies of Mao.
Oh, the monarchies of Mao?
Yes.
That's great. Okay.
Yep. Yep. Which they have since I got into this, they have since released a second source book exclusively on the monarchies of Mao, which I may have to buy at some point.
We might have to play this game.
I have trading cards for it too.
Trading cards?
Or not like trading cards. They were
like tokens almost.
Yeah. Tokens and like spells, items, like little reference materials.
Oh my God.
I don't know. Okay. It was on clearance because no one was buying it. So I bought it with the book because I was like, I'm never going to see this stuff anywhere again.
Yeah. That's a crime. People need to buy this book.
Yeah. It's fun. I like it.
Okay. So we've got
dogs. We've got cats. You've got lizards.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yep. You've got badgers, who
Ooh.
Seem to be incredibly imperialistic.
Makes sense.
Yep. The cats have vibes, man. We'll dip in and out of cat tech for a while. They do use the term comrade instead of friend. Dogs are big on friend. Everyone a dog meets is their friend, and it
that
takes
makes sense.
An incredible offense for a dog to stop referring to another dog as friend.
Yeah, that checks out.
Yeah, dogs, cats, lizards, badgers. I mean, there's I'm missing one.
You said rats.
Rats. Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Are there birds?
I have not seen birds.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't think there's a reason there couldn't be birds, but I have not seen anything airborne in this source book now that I think about it. I think there's lots of enemies that are not necessarily uplifted. Where is this list? I'll find it eventually.
Are there aquatic creatures?
Fish. There are fish. Yes, okay. That was maybe it. Yeah. So the world is pretty populated, and there are still, as we mentioned, lots of relics of humanity, now gone humanity. And again, the book goes out of its way to not tell you what happened. There's a number of hypotheses put forward in the source material. Perhaps we all died. Perhaps we all left. Became one with the singularity kind of thing gets sure. put forth. You take your pick. But the combination of humanity's disappearance, all of the things they created still being intact means that there have been some religions that have sprouted up.
All right, this is the good stuff. Okay,
this is
lay on me the dog religion.
The dog religion. Okay, so we're gonna talk about the word and the code of man.
Okay.
Man in this case is a genderless term. The book goes out of its way to point that out as well. If you wanna sub in the old ones. That is also used pretty synonymously.
Okay.
So the code of man, I am going to read to you here. This is kind of the like moral, ethical, religious, and societal kind of framework of Pugmire society. The city of Pugmire specifically. Because like the cats don't necessarily jive with this as much. But the code of man, be a good dog, obey the master, bite only those who endanger you, defend your home, stay loyal to those that are true, protect all from the unseen, fetch what has been left behind.
My favorite thing so far about all of this is that there are so many animal-related puns and really bad jokes that they could be doing. But somehow they just avoid it, but still do it somehow. Like it works.
Yeah.
It works so much better than it should. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. This is just, I don't know. I just like this game. It's good. It's just good. Yeah.
That's
it's coherent
really cool.
In a way I didn't expect, I think, is maybe. Like I could see someone starting with this idea and executing it incredibly lazily. And probably selling the same number of copies that this company did, putting in a lot of thought and work into this. So be a good dog is the goal. You want to be a good dog. You don't want to be a bad dog.
That's the golden rule right there.
Yeah. And the rest of the code kind of informs be a good dog. So the idea is if you do all of the things below be a good dog, you're probably a good dog.
Yeah.
If you screw one of those up, you might not be a good dog anymore. And that's
right.
That's not ideal. That label is not permanent. They're big on people being able to move kind of between those categories. So they're not quite as harsh with it as maybe we are now.
Yeah. But you can be a rescue dog. You can turn it around.
Yeah. And a lot of these things, with a lot of religion is open to like individual interpretation. Be a good dog is typically like at the top of the list for basically everybody. Obey the master comes obviously from our current relationship with dogs. In universe, that really enforces hierarchy within this society. So they have a like quasi feudal government. There is a it's not referred to as a king. Why have I forgotten the label? There is a royal family. Maybe it does actually go with king. I think about it. There's a royal family. There's a royal court of nobles. We'll get into that in a minute.
Okay.
But they're kind of at the top of the order, and shit rolls downhill from there.
Okay. And are there dog priests?
there are dog priests. There's a whole, the Church of Man is a whole thing. There are dog priests. There are dog cops. There are dog inquisitors, which are so you've got your king, royal family, king slash queen slash gender neutral pronoun of choice. The church uses a couple gender neutral. They have like a three-part like designation system for their hierarchies where they give gendered pronouns and then genderless ones as well. So that seems to be a little fluid in this universe. So you have your royal family, you have your royal court below that. There are royal guards that protect those groups of humans, dogs. Then you have everybody else, and there are dog police, and then the police are split into kind of two categories, where you have, like, your beat cop, and they sound not as shitty, but still kind of shitty. there are parallels. They seem a little trigger happy for the dog world.
Great.
And then you have, like, your detective branch is the Inquisitors, and they are church members, like trained by the church.
Gotcha.
And that's the investigative wing.
Okay.
So yeah, there's kind of your like rough hierarchy. We'll get into how the royal family works and like the whole business in a minute here. Bite only those who endanger you is somewhat self-explanatory. Bite does not need to be read
as literally. Actual biting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just kind of a synonym for harm in this case. Danger is kind of a weaselly subjective word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Different people have different ideas about. Defend your home, again, can be interpreted broadly. It could be like your physical home or your family or your city, however the individual wants to define that. Stay loyal to those that are true. So this is like a have no other gods before me kind of thing.
Yeah.
Kind of. It's a little, this one seems to be the squishy one. Like loyalty, they know the old ones had a relationship with dogs based around loyalty. So that takes kind of some amount of precedence here. But like, disloyalty and loyalty are again pretty subjective.
Mm-hmm.
The source material also introduces some thought experiments, which again, this kind of leads me back to the like Fuel Japan daimyo sort of situation here of just like, well, if you betray a friend to save your family or to save your city, are you loyal or disloyal?
Right.
Whatever. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. Shaky ground.
Yeah, exactly. So some of this is like world building. Some of it is also clearly like fodder for the game master to play with. Protect all from the unseen. This is a fun one. This is one of the other entity types that I intentionally did not mention earlier.
Yeah, is there ghosts? What?
So unseen is capitalized. Yeah.
Great.
Dogs. Before, and somewhat now, although this ability has wavered, have always been able to see dangers that were not visible to man.
Oh, of course.
And their job was to warn them of this.
Yes.
So that ability has kind of wavered over the hundreds of years or thousands of years. But there are, like, demons in this universe that possess other sentient creatures. They remind me of Dragon Age.
Like, oh, yeah.
Into the Fade. Like those. Yeah. So like there's like a cannibal demon. Is it a frothing demon? Is that what it was called? There's one that you read through the description. You're like, oh, that's rabies.
Yeah.
You're talking about rabies. That's what that is.
But it's like, a demon. Like it makes,
but it's a demon possession thing. It's like
that's really fun.
Yeah. And like I kind of looked at their stat blocks and these things are real bastards. Frothing demon, cannibal demon, demon hound. are canines that have been possessed by the unseen.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's so those are, that's really cool.
Yeah, those are your enemies kind of at the like top of the scary hierarchy.
And it is the, that mm-hmm. is the ability to see the unseen, is that just like only a dog ability?
Like I'm not positive, class ability? But it was only mentioned in the dog section.
Okay.
It's a little unclear to me if it's actually an ability or like a vibe.
Sure, sure.
Not really sure how. Okay. And I think that might be up to the game you want to run yourself. Like, I could imagine it wouldn't take a lot to re-steer this material in a direction where none of the demon stuff is actually real and is just kind of societal artifacts.
Yeah.
Or you could lean into it and like that's go your big bad. Yeah. And then our final kind of commandment here, fetch what has been left behind. So this is one of the driving forces both in the like meta game of Pugmire and within the city itself, is retrieving artifacts left behind from the old ones.
Okay, so that is like specifically in reference to like getting old artifacts.
Yes, to the point that like society is built around this concept.
Okay.
To a large degree. So the royal court, composed of nobles, you become a noble by finding and protecting a masterwork, which okay. would be a relic left over from the old ones. So if you as a family or an individual find a masterwork, bring it back to Pugmire, and the church authenticates it, then you can promote someone within your family to like the rank of duke or duchess, and that person sits on the royal court, has a vote, does the whole government thing, but you only maintain that position while you are in possession of that masterwork.
Oh, okay.
So if you, because you have to protect your home, so if yep. you lose that for some other, for any reason at all, you are no longer a noble family. So there's this whole kind of like enterprise built on exploration and trying to retrieve objects, both okay. for their like intrinsic power and ability, and then the societal standing you get from it as well.
Interesting. So then I assume there's also a good seedy underworld of bad dogs who are stealing masterworks to get power in the city.
Yeah, it's also kind of implied that like there's just some full on court shenanigans to that degree too. Like if a vote's going to go bad and you can shift the math by one or two.
Yeah.
Then yeah. So they convene monthly to do government, basically. Anything voted on requires 2/3 to pass, so not a lot happens.
Yeah, that checks out. How big is the royal court?
I did not see a number. I think it just kind of has to do with the number of masterworks.
But can you pass down a masterwork?
Yeah, so it promotes your family.
Okay.
So your family, your clan, possesses the masterwork. Internally, you choose one representative who is then the individual who becomes the noble and goes to court.
Okay.
But if something happens to that person, you would just promote a new individual from within the family.
That makes sense. So I guess the government is ever increasing in size then, generally. Like the amount of times that highly protected objects are lost to the ether is probably low?
Unclear? Okay. I would guess that's probably however much you want to do plot related yeah, to that.
Fair.
It seems like there's a couple different like levels you could go with this. There's like a whole adventurer's guild kind of thing that exists. So you could do like a low level game where you are all kind of nobodies out running errands, or you could do this whole court intrigue thing where you're closer to the top of the social hierarchy.
Okay.
And then there are other places as well besides Pugmire. So there's Mutt Town. There is a port, which we'll talk about a little bit. There's the Monarchies of Mao, which we mentioned. So dogs and cats have like a weird relationship. Where we pick up in the lore, there was in the past a war between the cats and the dogs, which has been ceasefired for a very long time at this point, but there's still some distrust there. I get like I was gonna say human Klingon relation vibes, but that doesn't mean anything to you yet.
Nope.
We haven't done that yet. we'll cycle back to that eventually. The dogs are distrustful of the cats. They're concerned that they may be practicing necromancy.
Oh.
Yeah. The cats have like a real different relationship with their concept of the old ones. So they sure. like the artifacts exist. So it's not like there's nothing to the dog religion. But the dogs view humans as like their progenitors, their protectors. They're meant to be serving dogs, or dogs are meant to be serving humans.
Yeah.
Where the cat vibe is more like, actually, we're the gods, and yeah. it is really irritating that our servants left without telling us where all the cool shit is.
I have two cats, and that checks out 100%.
Yeah, so, yeah, the cats have a vibe, and their society is laid out differently. It reminds me of Menzo Baranzan, actually, from Forgotten Realms.
Okay.
Which...
Is that the Underdark?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did I make you read that first Drizzt book? I
yes.
might have.
Like yes, you had.
Yeah. So yeah. that society. Where okay. you have like this real cutthroat kind of... They're the cats are all city-states. So
that,
they're...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's some amount of cohesion against an outside force, but there is plenty of infighting as well.
Classic cats.
Uh-huh. There was the port town used to be part of Pugmire, but is now kind of a standalone entity that no one's happy with, but everyone tolerates.
Okay.
We're going to talk about currency, and this will explain why people tolerate the port city.
All right. Yeah, I feel like port city is trade city, so we have to deal with it
yeah.
for that.
Yeah. So...
Is it Bones?
It is not Bones. You're going to like this.
Okay.
You're going to like this. So money as a concept is like relatively recent to dog society. And it is also pretty squishy in terms of like quantities. It's still kind of like vibes related, similar to the time.
Okay. Yeah. So there's no gold standard behind the treats trade.
There is a gold standard, kind of.
Okay.
Because the money ends up being functional. It was not. It was originally thought to be kind of useless shit that only artisans and weirdos played with until some intrepid individuals discovered a use for it. Okay. So dog money is plastic.
Okay.
So eventually dogs learned to... It started with just like you could just find plastic fucking lying around all over the damn place because yeah, that
yeah.
checks out. And eventually yep. they learned how to mine and like smelt plastic. So a typical coin is like 2 inches in diameter, about a quarter inch thick. Below that's your top end currency. That's
okay.
your gold piece. Below that, you have just chunks of plastic. 10 chunks is roughly equivalent to a coin. In terms of denomination. And then underneath you have shards. And again, you're 10 shards to a chunk.
Okay.
So 100 shards gets you a coin. So apparently dogs are on base 10.
Yeah.
Which is good, nice.
Good stuff. Yeah, that's helpful.
But the so European plastic was dogs. just kind of like a useless-ish sort of thing. Until they realized that it could be used in boat hulls. To navigate the acid sea.
There's an acid sea. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the port town exists because these are the people who now know how to use plastic to make boats.
Boats.
To then do commerce and transportation, because there are like spooky forests and other hazards like that that you can bypass by sailing around them.
Okay.
And it's typically both faster and safer to do so.
That checks out. Okay, so tolerated because of technology.
Yeah, the port is kind of like its own city-state kind of thing. It seems, again, like kind of loose in structure, but everyone puts up with it because they need them.
Do you think the plastic is like a weird holdover from Chew Toys?
Oh, could be anything. They don't. They're late on the details. I think I just gave you all of the details that were in the book, basically.
Huh.
It's a little squishy there too, so you can kind of run with that in whatever direction you choose as a player.
Yeah, I was just going back to the bottle caps discussion from Fallout, and it feels like a very similar, like, this is a fun thing that brought us pleasure in the before times, and now it is the end times, and now it is currency.
Yep.
Real subversion.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fun. You mentioned Masterworks earlier, and I'm curious what is a Masterwork in terms of getting me a seat on the console versus just, this is a cool relic that I found.
That one is also kind of squishy.
Okay.
The book kind of leads me to believe that most thing, like, Masterwork
anything.
Is, yeah, almost a synonym for artifact. But I don't know if I like that exactly. I think I would like them to have to be something of some substance, I would hope.
Yeah.
Like,
is it a functional pocket watch is like a Masterwork or something?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, for sure. They go out of their way to do the whole, like, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Like, that's directly quoted in the book.
Okay.
So, like, the whole, some of the, like, the tech to magic spectrum is kind of all over the place. But everything it's the same number line is technology and magic. Those are the same things. But they don't, since their understanding of technology is so fragmented, if you get anything to work, like, sometimes it's basically magic. Like, I think the example they used in the book was something like, what's really the difference between, like, a video call and a scrying mirror?
Yeah.
Like, you have this thing you're looking into and you're observing a different place in real time. Like, that's kind of how we would describe a scrying mirror in these high fantasy games.
Huh. Yeah, that's fun. I never thought of that.
Yeah, I didn't either. And so, like, they're trying to work backwards, but you're starting with, like, a medieval peasant's understanding, and you're given a, like, a Dell Inspiron, and trying to reverse engineer the society that created the Dell Inspiron. So, you make a lot of wrong guesses.
Yeah, I imagine, I mean, maybe this is not true because of them being uplifted and coexisting, but I imagine that there isn't a dog human language Rosetta Stone out there.
No.
Human language?
Part of the uplifting process, all uplifted animals share a universal language. It was not really described how that relates to however humans communicated.
Okay.
In what is last known. They also mentioned that the uplifting process fixed, like, diabetes and hip dysplasia and...
Oh, yeah.
All those other dog ailments. That makes
sense. Sure. Yeah. You're going to give them thumbs. You might as well give them all the other stuff,
fix
too.
Might as well let the pug breathe.
Yeah. Sorry about that. That's selective breathing we did. We gave you brains this time, though, so...
Yeah, enjoy the hypoxia.
Let's see. What else? We might leave it there for now, actually.
I'm good with that.
A slightly shorter one. And then we can do a part two on, like, the geography and Pugmire specifically as a town. Because there's a lot of information about that in here. Or we could go through, like, the breed class system. That's pretty interesting how they handle that.
Yeah, or why they're fighting giant ants.
Why they're fighting giant ants, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like this is a good overview of this incredible right? game world. And I immediately want to know about the Acid Sea and the Monarchy of Mao, the Legion of Lizards, all my rowdy friends.
Oh, what are the we'll have to talk about that mouse cult too, because that's I finally figured out that, like, oh, they're lab rats specifically.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah. So they, like, yeah,
man,
but they're like somewhere between lab rats and like Nazi scientists. Like, they're bad dudes is the vibe from that paragraph.
Yeah.
Of, like, they're doing evil science.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, they came by that, honestly. That's fair.
Yep, fair enough. Yeah, this is fun. I'm gonna, after this episode, I'm gonna go on Itch and see if I can find a PDF of this thing or something, because holy cow, this sounds incredible.
I'm sure they sell it on their site. Onyx Path Publishing is the company who produced it.
Okay.
It's probably on DriveThruRPG, I would guess.
Oh, that checks out, yeah.
But yeah, they've released a couple new source materials since I first looked at this. Their adventure path little modules are called fetch quests, which is fun.
Oh my god, that's so good.
Yep.
Squeaks in the deep.
Squeaks in the deep.
It's real good. The art the art in this book is very good, and it's just really funny to see it. Gandalf, but with a poodle face.
Yeah. And oh, let me find.
I love that.
The full spread, like what you see just inside the front and the rear cover is like really similar to do you remember the Pathfinder screen that I had? GM screen.
Yeah.
Or I think it's the art in there too, where you open up and you get like here's like your stereotypical visual version of each of the classes.
Yeah, yeah.
This does the same thing.
Yeah, this is just full blown a bulldog in chainmail with a two-hander.
Yeah, maybe we'll run something in this at some point. I could probably.
Yeah, this seems like a fun time. If the mechanics of the game are built out even as, like, close to as much as what's going on in the world that they have set up, like, this is going to be a good time.
Yeah. Yeah, and it seems to be pretty solid. And I think, like, the rough edges it has, I'm sure we can work around pretty easily.
I am all in on Pugmire at this point. I will work on my rogue cat build for our inevitable game.
See, and now I'm gonna have to get the pirate source book, because that's probably where we learn about the Acid Sea. Out here on the Acid Sea, it doesn't matter what your house is or what noble family you're descended from. All you need is a sturdy ship, a plastic hull, and a firm wind behind you, and maybe some guns.
Wait, there's guns? I was gonna ask if there were guns.
That is a quote from Stumpy, who is the gecko captain of the Pig's Tail.
Stumpy would know. I'm always saying this.
Oh, okay. Highlights include two new species for players to enjoy, lizards and birds.
There are birds.
Oh, there's the full ship combat rules. Six new callings, two for dogs, two for cats.
We might have to have a pirate adventure.
Just rules for building, sailing, and sinking ships.
Yep, that sounds all right. A nautical pirate adventure.
A nautical where you just play Puss in Boots.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yep. This episode has devolved into us looking at things on the internet again.
Yep. Classic.
Yep. Feel free to cut out any or all of this. Yep. But yeah, there's Pugmire.
This is great. I love Pugmire. I am all in. And I await our next episode about the Curious Cats of Mao.
Okay. Look forward to that. What, probably like June of 26, if our current patterns hold.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we did talk about doing it, so that means that we're never going to do it, or not until we give up on all other ideas.
Still waiting on Perfect Dark.
Yep, it'll come out someday. That and, I was going to say Dino Crisis, Turok. So now Turok and Turok, Dino Crisis are out.
Yep.
Someday.
I almost said like four more. I gotta stop.
Yeah, can't do that.
I have nothing left. I have no end for this, so I will just take a small bow.
Yeah. Well done. Good dog. Good episode. Anyway, thanks for listening. Gordon Hamburger is the place you can go for all things Codex. What we're doing, game reviews. Sometimes we stream. Logan just streamed some. Helldivers. You just did some Helldivers.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, go. Check out the YouTubes, all of that stuff, and find other things that we're doing. Our music is done by Nicholas Cahill, our very good friend, who we will probably loop into playing this game at some point. And
he would definitely play this game.
Yes, well, 100%. He will be a fencing cat. He will be our Puss in Boots.
I've ruined your outro. I've ruined it. It's okay. Hold on.
Yep, holding on.
This is exclusively for Nick. That was the name of it. Okay, I did see someone on Reddit that did a mashup of Pugmire with Shadow of the Demon Lord.
Interesting. Okay.
Nick will know what that means, and he'll be delighted by the concept. That is all. This could have been a text message. Sorry, everybody.
Sorry. We'll be back next week with another Codex entry, and maybe it'll be about Pugmire, but probably
not. It might be about Pugmire. Probably not, but it actually might be, though. I don't know. We're both kind of dialed in on this right now.
Yeah, this is good stuff. All right. Goodbye. See you later, and be a good dog.
Be a good dog.
Be a good dog. Woof.
Rough.